It is week 5 of the year 2021, and you're listening to Father Roderick to the Max. Welcome back to another episode recorded for you as one of my monthly supporters. I really appreciate your help, and some of you have recently upped their subscription to a new tier, which is amazing. And I'm also really grateful for the new sponsors that are helping me do the masses on Sunday. We have still have lots of things that we need to somehow organize and that are not yet attainable because of the lack of finances. We would really want to bring some music to the masses, but you know, hiring a professional musician, that is still a little bit beyond our reach. But I'm happy to see that some of you have the financial bandwidth to actually up their subscription a little bit. One thing I wanted to make you aware of is that if you change tiers, which happens from time to time, you don't automatically get the benefits of that tier. You actually have to go to Patreon and tell Patreon, hey, I switched recently from $2.50 a month to $5 a month, so I want to be part of this tier. Now, with Inga, we've gone through the list recently, and we've seen that it's not a large portion of you, but some of you are still in a lower tier than what you're actually contributing for. And so I would really invite you to check your Patreon settings and see if you actually get all the benefits that you are entitled to. And if not, make some changes. If you get stuck or you need some help, you can always message Inga, who will be happy to help you. She's our community manager. And I'm also thinking, now we're talking about Patreon, to use something that is relatively new to the Patreon system, and that is you can actually earmark certain tiers. Now, I've always had this kind of stacked tiers where you start very low with the $2.50, just because I don't want to create barriers for people to join the Patreon community. And of course, some people are just in financial dire straits and they're not able to contribute much, but I still want to be able to kind of make them feel part of the process of doing these things together. So we'd have 250, 5, 10, 20, 25, etc. But then every higher tier would get all the benefits from the lower tiers. But now it's interesting to see that since I'm also active on YouTube and I'm currently building up a Lego YouTube channel for another demographic that I was unable to reach with my more geeky main channel on YouTube, I get questions from people that only know me from my Lego channel. And they want to support my Lego endeavor. So some people are like, I would love it if you could build this or this set. And I'm happy to contribute a little bit so that you can actually purchase that set. I'm thinking, well, I can point them to Patreon, but then they're going to see Father Roderick making documentaries and Mass on Sunday, and there's no Lego in any of these tiers. Well, it turns out that now you can create tiers, separate tiers for separate audiences, and even with separate rewards that have the same amount. So in the past, you could only create a tier with a different amount, but then everything gets so needlessly complicated, and you would have like a $2.50 and a $3 tier and a $4 tier just in order to be able to kind of group people together for certain things. But now I still have to do this, but I could create, like, for instance, a $2.50 tier for Lego people. I could promote that during my Lego stream, saying, hey, if I can get 50 people to join the $2.50 tier, that means I've got more than $100 per month to buy a Lego set. So I can do the bigger sets, which I cannot afford right now because Lego is pretty expensive. But if we bundle our strength, then you can actually, and plus I can have the patrons, the Lego patrons, do suggestions, so it becomes also more part of they become Lego co-producers in a certain way. So I'm thinking of doing that. The only thing I wonder is if I create, like, for instance, a Lego tier at $2.50 and maybe another Lego tier at $5. I don't know. And I would link that to specific Lego rewards. There may be people in the, you know, in the among the current patrons that are like, well, but I'm in the 10 euro or $10 tier, and but I would also like to get that Lego reward. So, but I don't. I'm not going to pay even more. So, still have to try to figure that out. But I think in reality, a lot of the people are very focused on one of the things that I do. So I know that, for instance, the new patrons, a lot of the new patrons are really helping me with the mass, on the international mass. And they find that very valuable, so that's why they become patrons. But I think that we should group that together so that we also know a little bit more specifically how what our budget is and how much we can spend on the liturgy and on the vestments and some of the other things on our liturgical wish list. But we can't just kind of start spending money and taking it from the patrons, because a lot of the other patrons are, you know, they want to support the documentaries that I make and the videos and the podcasts. So, but I think it may be a good time now to diversify the various tiers and link specific rewards to specific groups of patrons. And one of the things that I love about our Discord server, and again, if you have not visited the Discord server, you have access because you're a patron, and some of you are also donating and are listening to this because they donate directly, which is also possible. Sometimes that's easier for people in Europe, because otherwise it goes through Patreon, through the United States, with all sorts of, you know, fees that we have to pay for international bank transfers and stuff. So some people give directly, but they get access to a specific feed that will also, they are also listening to this. But they can also be added to the Discord server, and the Discord server itself, we can split that up into different groups. And we've already done that with the kitchen and with the segment for TV shows, etc. So I may add a Lego section there too, to be even more welcoming to these new community members. But this is what I love. This is why I get so excited about this year. We've seen the community evolve quicker than any year before. And I think it's probably also linked to the pandemic, that it makes us appreciate community much more. But I think it's also a result of our efforts that have doubled in building community. That is our core business, and we create that community around productions. It's never a goal in itself. It's always about helping people and bringing these people together so they can help each other. From that mindset, I think that we can go a long way, and it's exciting that we discover these new ways, like my Lego hobby, which has always been kind of a bit of a strange element in everything else that I was doing. By focusing it on one channel, I'm getting, and this is still very, very small. It's one of my smallest channels so far. But I think with a bit of consistency, that can grow into its own community, and it will have another, it will lower the threshold for a totally different demographic that I wouldn't be able to reach with my Star Wars talks and podcasts and masses on Sunday. So, yeah. I'm enjoying it. You can read more about that in my upcoming February newsletter. Thank you so much, by the way, for all your feedback on the work that I did on the first January newsletter. That was really good to read, that you appreciated it, that you enjoyed reading it. And for me also, it's been a joy to make that. I have to take a day to produce it, basically, which may seem like a lot of time for what is basically like a 4-page leaflet. But I noticed that I need to sit down and really focus on it, and it helps me to reserve a day for that. Because this is it's one of these ways in which I focus on community, and communicating with the community is what brings the community together and what strengthens it. So that is why I spend more time than ever on this monthly newsletter. And it's just monthly, so it's one day per month. So that's still feasible.
Just look at the x-rays. You see that dark spot there? Whiplash.
Whiplash? Oh no.
And this smudge here that looks like my fingerprint? No, that's trauma.
Quick health update. Last week I was planning on, and you've heard me mention this also, I was planning on recording an episode of The Walk in which I would detail a little bit more what I learned during physical therapy in my during my COVID recovery. Because a lot of the things that I've learned actually go beyond just recovery from COVID. They are very important for my overall balance and health and have to do with changing a lifestyle that has been detrimental to my health for years. And it's just COVID that made me more aware of that. So that's what I did. I went out for a walk late at night, right before the curfew, and talked for about an hour, had to run to get back in time before the curfew would start. And it's when I ran into the house that I noticed that I had not pressed record. It still happens to me. So that episode of The Walk is lost forever. Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe you don't, up until this moment, you didn't even know that it existed. So it was just me like, oh my goodness. I talked for an hour to myself. But I'll make it up to you. I'll record a new episode this week where I'll still kind of rehash that the content from that lost episode. But just a brief update here. My physical health is still, you know, I'm doing well. I'm happy to say it. My heartbeat is still really good. Today it's a little bit higher. It's now 80. I'm sitting in a chair, but it's probably because I'm podcasting and I've already recorded a full hour of podcasts. So that's still, you know, more activity than when I'm fully in rest. But it's nothing like it used to be a few weeks ago. I notice, and this is something I'm still struggling with, I notice that mentally I'm quickly affected by stuff, by concerns, worries, sometimes receiving feedback that is difficult to hear. It affects me more, I think, than it used to, and that may also be linked to the pandemic situation and not having my usual social contacts that can counterbalance that. So I tend to overthink things that are happening and that make me worried, and that then as a result also affects my sleep. So I wake up not fully rested because my brain has been too busy. And I have also noticed, and this is an old mechanism and maybe you'll recognize it, when I'm worried or stressed out or frustrated, I tend to make the wrong decision. So you kind of self-medicate by watching TV until midnight, telling myself, I deserve this because I've had such a hard day and people are so mean to me. And so, but then when I go to bed at midnight, of course, I still wake up at 7 o'clock. I don't sleep enough. So I'm tired. I don't get my things done. I have more. When I'm tired, it's more difficult to maintain the work rhythm that is good for me. So I tend to sometimes completely lose a morning, and because I can't focus, I don't have the mental energy to focus on my priorities, and I waste my time with all sorts of other things. So procrastination becomes is one of those symptoms of not being fully rested. So it's a bit, chicken and egg. How can I get rid of all the stress? Well, probably should sleep more. But it also requires me to go after the causes of that stress and see if I can somehow mitigate them or eliminate them. And it's not always within my power. So I've just yesterday I was struggling a lot with that, and I had a rough day. It was especially the last part of the day. It was really feeling sad, mostly sad, not even depressed, but just sad. It's like, why is all this stuff happening? I even wrote down a prayer in my journal. Like, God, can we tone it down a little bit? I know you want to teach me something, but right now it's a little bit too much for me to handle. And I'm just sad. But I told myself, you know, what has helped me in the past when I'm in these times where I feel a little bit more, I don't know, more down, was to listen to, you know, audiobooks from Tony Robbins or, you know, some of these other books that are helping me to put things in perspective, basically. It's not really about what they say, but it's about this encouragement to take charge of your own life. And if you feel down, then it's easy to step into this victim role where you feel that you're in the backseat and someone else is driving your life, is driving the car of your life. But you are in control of how you want life and other people impact you and what you can do yourself to make things better. And I've noticed that books like this are, it's not just something you read and then you know it. This is much more of a lifestyle that you need to rehearse and you need to practice. And the more you do it, the better you'll get at it. And I just need a refresher. I need to hear those teachings again, go through it, because I know how much they helped me a few months ago. But it kind of fades away after a while, so I need to go, at least I know which books have helped me, and I'm pretty sure that if I would re-listen to those audiobooks, they'll help me to get out of this mental state. At least they can help me mitigate it and focus on, you know, what is actually helpful. Sulking about things that are not going the way you would like them to go is actually never helping. It's never improving the situation. And it's also the art of putting things into perspective. I tend to overthink other people's reactions and overreact to especially negative input because of scars in the past. And every once in a while, those scars start to play up again. And then I become hypersensitive to things that make me sad, and it does impact me more than it should be intellectually, but it's because it touches upon deep feelings of insecurity and fear, and there is only one person who can solve that, and that is me, with the help of God. But still, I have to adopt a different mindset because this is all happening in my mind. And learning how to deal with difficult people, with criticism, that is something I know intellectually, but I haven't rehearsed it enough because usually my life is actually quite calm and positive. And I notice how vulnerable I am once things are not calm and stuff is happening and some people are not kind or not helpful or maybe even adversarial. It's in these moments that I realize how much I still have to learn. It's easy to stay calm when your life is calm. But where it really matters, where you really learn how strong you truly are, is when you put it under stress. It's like physical exercise. You know, you truly know if you're a runner, if you run a half marathon, but if you just run for 5 minutes around the church, then you may think you are strong, but you haven't put your body to the test. And I think it's the same probably with our mindset. It's in the moments of difficulty that you have to think, okay, so why am I feeling like this? What is going on? And what are the steps that I can do to improve this? Because there's always something you can do. Anyway. Talking to myself, but this is important for me to be aware that my mental state also has consequences for my physical health. And if I improve one, it will also affect the other. Let's go into the kitchen. I got an idea from Tim Ferriss. You know him from the book, The 4-Hour Work Week. I think it's called The 4-Hour Work Week. Tim Ferriss has a YouTube channel that nowadays starts to pop up in my recommendations feed. And it's probably because I watch some other people more into productivity genre. So this video was about breakfast and his recommendations for what kind of breakfast can actually help you lose weight. And I make no secret of the fact that I have to lose weight. I've grown much heavier during the corona times, and in the winter I always get a little bit heavier because it's because of the weather. I tend to go out less and move less, but it's been particularly bad because of the COVID recovery, and I just didn't have much stamina for physical exercise. So now it's time to kind of fight back and to get to my ideal weight. And I've got a long way to go. I think I have to lose about 10 kilos, which is 20 pounds. That's a lot. That's a lot. I'll already be glad if I can lose 5 pounds. But even that, it for some reason, it's difficult. And I think it has to do not just with one factor, but an important factor is what I eat. And Tim Ferriss in that video says you cannot outrun your diet. So losing weight is always linked to diet. No matter how healthy you live, how much you walk, if you overeat, then you're going to get heavier. You're not going to lose weight. And that is true. I know that for a fact because that's what I've learned in the past when I was trying to get to a healthier weight. His advice for breakfast is actually to focus on a combination of two things. Fiber, so not carbs, but fiber. Often we eat carbs like bread because of its fiber contents, but he specifies fiber and protein. Protein, because it feeds your muscles, and so if you work out in the morning, protein is actually important for the repair of your muscle tissue. But also fiber, which is important for feeling full and also for your digestive system. So fiber is vital for prolonged health. But his advice was something that struck a bell. I was like, I need to get some input from the community. So he advises to eat, for instance, 1 or 2 eggs in the morning. For protein, and combine that with green-leaved vegetables like spinach. Now, issue that I have with spinach is that I can't eat too much of it because of its alkaline content. So it basically is not good for someone who suffers occasionally from the formation of kidney stones, because spinach could help the growth of these kidney stones. So there are other green-leaved vegetables as well. You know, the Roman lettuce that I normally eat in the morning is actually not the best source. I used to make smoothies with endives, which sounds gross, and it sometimes was gross. But these green smoothies were, for me, a way to get green-leaved vegetables into my diet without cooking a meal in the morning, because that's still something that I don't know if, well, you can learn everything, but it's just not something that I would like to eat in the morning, like fully cooked veggies. However, he says, you know, do that. Just eat green-leaved vegetables and then combine that with a source of fiber that is not carbs. And he recommends beans. That is interesting because beans are actually, that's something that I do associate with breakfast. Probably because of English breakfast, they eat these white beans in red tomato sauce. Now, the issue with that is the sauce, the beans itself are fine. The sauce is loaded with sugar. It's very sweet. And that, of course, would cause an insulin spike, which will then hamper your overall dietary balance. But I can see myself eating beans. Actually, I did that this morning. I had some leftover fava beans, I think they're called. So normally I would put that in a salad. But that was actually quite tasty. And then the eggs actually do that works. It fills me up for a couple of hours, so I don't get hungry. I am not tempted to take any snacks. I've also noticed that if I do a more protein-based dinner, I'm less likely to be tempted to snack before I go to bed because I'm not hungry at all. There's not this feeling like I'd like to go to the fridge and eat something that's not good for me. Whereas with carbs and with these insulin spikes, you get that high, the sugar rush, and then afterwards you get hungry again. So that's why I try to avoid, sugar and ice cream and pudding and that sort of stuff in the evening, because I know it will derail me. But here's my question to you. Would you have suggestions for hearty breakfasts, considering what I just shared with you, but maybe stuff that you eat yourself, something that is not bread or pancakes or granola or whatever, oats, but something that is along the lines of what Tim Ferriss recommends, but is not like the problem that I have is every morning eggs and beans and veggies. I'm not always in the mood. I just have these days that I long for some diversity. I'm very. Some people love to eat the same. I remember listening to this years ago. I think maybe it was a video. I think it was a video by Cliff Ravenscraft, and he said that he would always eat the same eggs with bacon. I think it's almost like a ritual. But it was always the same. And I remember watching that and I was thinking, wow, I'm so different in the sense that I get bored after eating the same thing twice. I cannot do that. I need something else. It's probably my brain. My body couldn't care less, but my brain wants something different. So I'm looking for inspiration and I get stuck. So if you have any ideas, we have the kitchen over on the Discord server, as well as the podcast feedback section. So if you can help me out, I'd appreciate it. This is the segment where I will briefly share with you what I've learned on the internet. And this week, I want to go back to TikTok again, which is an application that I don't always have time for. It's so addictive, and I keep scrolling, and I keep subscribing. Like, every week, I discover new creators. It's amazing. Like, the other day, I was... So they have two feeds, right? On the left is the feeds of people that you subscribe to. So you know what you get. But then you have also the feed for you, which is based on the things that you've liked in the past and watched in the past. But it's the algorithm always tries to broaden your horizon, introduce you to new stuff, which is actually, I think, how social media should work. I know that TikTok gets a lot of flack for, their privacy policies. But at the same time, I think that TikTok, for me at least, is doing something that Twitter and Facebook and Instagram are not doing, and even YouTube is not doing. YouTube, Facebook, the algorithm gives me the same. Like it's closing. I feel like it's closing the world. If I click on two Lego videos for the next week, the half of my recommended videos will be Lego. That to me is a sign of a flawed algorithm, because there's so many other things that I want to watch, but for some reason the algorithm just looks at like very short term stuff. TikTok is very different. When I look at that For You feed, there's always something new that is exciting. And then I was like, wow, I had never discovered this person or this work if it hadn't been for this algorithm. And it becomes part of my world. So I click subscribe if I am interested by that person. So you can click to what other videos. So sometimes you get these one day wonders. And you've got this one video that is amazing, and you look at the rest of what these people produce, and it's like, meh, has nothing to do with that one video that went viral. But oftentimes, these people have actually, they post something, because TikTok rewards niche targeting, you will see so much more of similar content. So the other day, I saw a video of a girl, I think she's 18, and she's like sitting there, terrible camera, very grainy, and she's clearly in her own room, and production value zero. But she says, like, this is how you make music. And then she starts, what was the first thing that she did? Play like a melody on a keyboard. And it does sound really weird. And then she adds a bass. And then she adds some drums. And this is a 30-second video. And at the end, she starts singing. And then it all comes together. And it's this amazing voice. Like, it's an 18-year-old girl. As far as I've been able to see, she has no records anywhere. There's nothing on YouTube Music, or even on YouTube, or on Spotify. But she's got this voice that is like this jazzy voice that I think is spectacular. Absolutely spectacular. Plus, she makes her own music. And I'm thinking, like, I would totally listen to an entire record with this kind of music. And then you look around and there's no contract. It's just, and it's only on TikTok that these talents all of a sudden emerge. And I wouldn't be surprised if a year from now, this will be a major artist. And if it hadn't been for TikTok, I would have never heard of her. And this is not an exception. I see this time and again in different areas. So there are also like comedians that pop up in my timeline. Usually it's young kids or, you know, like in their 20s. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is 100 times funnier than anything I've ever seen on television. And this is just on TikTok. It's crazy how it makes me appreciate so much how much the creativity, the inventivity of people. It's just marvelous. And maybe I sound like an old guy, like it's unbelievable, these young kids nowadays, what they can do. But it's truly heartwarming to see what a wonderful world we live in and what people can do and make. And this, to me, from a religious point of view, is what heaven is going to be all about. If there's one thing that I don't think is going to lack in eternal life, is creativity. What is creativity? Creativity is the Holy Spirit working through people, making us co-creators. Like, God is the creator, of course. But he always wants us to co-create. That's why art has a religious dimension. What is art if not an expression of God's creativity through us? He wants to work with us and through us. And that is why art can sometimes lift us up and transcend its own meaning, because it's infused with divine creativity. And for me, TikTok has been one of these rare places where you can see this at work, even though I hardly ever see religious TikTokers. And maybe that's a good thing. But what I do see is it's not even a community, because these people are not related or anything. But I see a world of creativity and knowledge and kindness and support. I mean, I learn so much from these people. And what warms my soul as an old guy is that most of these people are half my age, and they are helping me in a way that I wouldn't be able to help other people. Or they inspire me. They bring a quality. They bring art of which I could only dream. And it is so gratifying to be on the receiving end without feeling that, oh, I have always got to be the person who creates, who entertains, who shares. Everybody is doing this, and there's so much talent. If TikTok is a glimpse of what heaven will be about, because imagine, heaven is going to be all these souls that have ever lived working creatively with the Holy Spirit, how can that not be amazing? It's crazy to bring TikTok and heaven in a same discussion, but to me this is why I'm so taken by what TikTok does. It's not TikTok. TikTok is just a tool, but it's what it helps reveal in the world, and it's so much more positive and heartwarming and motivating than what I see on the news, what the discussions that I follow on the web. All that is so often laden with negativity, with strife, with stress and fears. And but this is also life. This is also the world in which I live. These are the people that I would like to spend eternity with, because I'm already in this life. Like, wow, I'm so excited about what they do. And it's, you know, it's easy to get excited about a Godzilla versus Kong trailer, which is produced with big budget and tons of people working on that day and night for years. But I can get just as excited about these small discoveries on TikTok where, you know, this is just a person in his or her bedroom with, you know, crappy camera, but with an amazing talent. And to feel that you're actually like this unearthing talent that no one else knows and is just there for free without big budget, without a marketing campaign, it's stunning. Anyway, what did I learn from TikTok this week? Long story short, is I'm following a few people that give tutorials on how to use Procreate on the iPad. Now, you know that I've got this bigger iPad with a Apple Pencil, and I've discovered how hard it is to paint. It's actually something that you can learn. The other day, I had a painter here in the house, one of my parishioners, and he offered to paint the toilet that they installed a few months ago. So they installed the toilet, which was medieval before that, and so now it finally is kind of up to date. But everything else was still in disarray, was not painted. The door was damaged and out of whack. And so he's a professional painter, has been all his life. But then when we had a cup of coffee, he was telling me about the artistic painting that he did as a hobby. It turns out he has a even bigger room than a garage. And he's making hundreds, literally hundreds of artist paintings. And he showed me photos on his phone and was like, what? That is so cool. That's so good. And this, I was very, like, all of a sudden, oh, I don't think I'm going to dabble around with real paint and because mess, and I don't have the space for it. But I can still, the cool thing about these apps on the iPad is that they emulate the physical paint and the techniques. So I can still learn a lot from painters, but then I have to train myself to do that on the iPad. And that is just something you have to learn. It's like drawing. It's like making music. You only get so far if you just mess around a little bit yourself. There are techniques that you can learn, and these YouTube videos really help me. So I've just looked for Procreate, and you see what I love about it is also these are short videos. Like in 1 minute, gives you an idea. Like, this is how you do it. And then I'm thinking, okay, I don't have to work my way through an hour because I just don't have the patience to. I have the patience to watch an hour if it's really, really, really something I want to know. Like I watch sometimes these Lego reviews and then, yes, I don't care if it's 45 minutes, but I keep watching. For painting, that's kind of a side hobby. So, but to get like an impulse, like this 1 minute video, and I was like, oh, I can try that out. And I sit down and start up that, and then I try to duplicate the steps, and little by little I start to learn. That's how I also taught myself how to edit in Adobe, just doing what I talked about last week for what lights and how to light people. And a few weeks ago I knew nothing about how to light my scenes and which gear to buy. I did a bit of research thanks to YouTube, thanks to TikTok, and now I think I have got a pretty good grasp of what it takes to create professional lighting. And I love to learn. I love to have the feeling that I'm still there's still so much to discover. So that's what I wanted to share with you.
I'm quite keen on comic books, especially the ones about superheroes. I find the whole mythology surrounding superheroes fascinating.
You ever try these comics?
No.
You know something?
No, what?
You read too many comic books.
I follow this Facebook group called Catholic Geeks. Look it up. It's a private group, but it's got 18.6K members. That's a lot. I never post, actually, in this group. I should, because I am real big Catholic geek. So, maybe I should introduce myself. But there was this Jesuit who posted something he noticed in one of the most recent Simpsons episodes. So it's season 31, episode 9, in case you want to look it up. And this is a Ned Flanders-based episode. Ned Flanders is the neighbor of the Simpsons, very religious man, and of a Protestant denomination, as far as we know. The episode is called Todd. One of his kids is called Todd. Why Hast Thou Forsaken Me? And in that post on Facebook, it shows Ned Flanders... Oh, there's the door. I got to open the door here for a second. Hold on.
I'm not sure who that is. Guess who?
Guess who that was? Guess who that was? I'm recording. Recording Father Roderick to the max. Inga, are you there? She didn't come in. Why not? She was bringing me cake. Last week, remember at the end of the show, like there was someone at the door and it was Inga who was actually bringing me like spare ribs. Hey, you only get that on Father Roderick to the max. I would cut that out normally in my shows, but... Oh, well, so she's been getting, I think, going to the bakery, and I think that she and Hank are going to clean up the church because we still have to remove the nativity scene, which I explained earlier on in the, was it in this show? No, it was in the other show, but since we waited until Candlemas to remove the nativity scene, they are in the church right now. I open the door, it's like, I'm podcasting again? Anyway, it's almost lunchtime, so... Maybe that cake comes right in time. Although it's maybe not the best dietary decision. Anyway, back to Ned Flanders. You see Ned Flanders kneeling at his bed, praying. And in the background, on his bed table, there is a Bible. And that Bible has a very distinct cover. And apparently, according to this Jesuit, he says, that is the Ignatius Bible, which means that is a Catholic Bible. We all thought that Ned Flanders was Protestant. What? Who put that there? And then someone else who knows me says, didn't you have a friend who worked on the Simpsons show? It's Luis Escobar. He does a lot of the kind of design work, so he doesn't do the actual animation. But... no, Hank is also coming in. Like, every good. It's a happy family here. Hello. Inga's like, she's podcasting. Don't talk. They're going to hear us. I thought they would come here at like 1 o'clock, but apparently they're already here. But they know the way. What was I saying? So Luis Escobar is also Catholic. And so I tagged him in that post, and he answered. He's like, "No, I wasn't involved in this. I actually looked it up. And there was in none of the pre-production work did they have that cover of the Bible. However, some of the other animators are also Catholic, so maybe they just put it there on purpose, or someone looked up Bible cover and then copied that from Google without realizing that it was a Catholic Bible." But it was so funny to see that very distinct cover in the room of Ned Flanders, and then get that whole discussion. And it's so this is what that group is about. It's just like Catholic nerddom. Catholic nerds, Catholic geeks. Only Catholic geeks would notice this. But it was funny. Anyway, speaking of Luis Escobar, I was trying to find that post. And so I typed in Luis Escobar in on Facebook. And it didn't lead me to this particular post, but it did lead me to some feedback that he left me, I think, in 2015. And apparently I'd been talking on the show. Back then it was called, I think, Geek Priest. Anyway, it was a show that I was doing, and I had been talking about Spider-Man and cartoons and whatnot. And he wrote an article about 10 of his favorite superhero animated TV shows. And I totally forgotten about that post. And of course, back then, we didn't have Disney Plus, so most of what was in that article was unavailable. Like half of it, if more than half of it, is DC related, but he also mentions a couple of Marvel shows that are now all available on Disney Plus. So I went back to that article. It's also in the show notes in case you're interested. And I'm going to check out some of those shows. The best one that I'm very curious about is Spectacular Spider-Man, of which I've only saw a few episodes. I loved it. That's the only one that Disney Plus has not on its channel. They have got a lot of other kind of so-so mediocre Spider-Man shows, but there is this one Spectacular Spider-Man series that apparently is the best. And I don't know why it's not on Disney Plus, because it is Marvel. But maybe it's, they sold the rights or whatever. We'll see. Speaking of Disney, last week I went through that list of TV shows and movies that are going to be part of Disney Plus Stars. It turns out I had a partial list. I didn't see Die Hard 1, for instance, and then John Domick wrote to me, well, hey, it's on the list. But he had an email, which I overlooked, that gives the full list. And I was happy to see that he has even more movies and TV shows. So, Disney, even though they upped the price, you get a lot of value for $10 a month. I would rather, if I had to choose, which I don't have to, I would rather keep Disney Plus and ditch Netflix. Because Amazon Prime is now much better than it used to be. And it turns out I don't watch Netflix that much. A little bit from time to time, but not as much as Disney right now. All right. Links in the show notes.
The humanoid must not escape.
Since Cake is waiting for me, I'm going to skip the liturgy segment. Not much to mention there anyway, just that with the International Mass, I've decided to kind of focus a little bit more on English instead of mixing things up all the time. So we were doing sometimes Spanish, French, German. But in reality, 95 to 98% of the people that are assisting at that Mass are able to understand English. And I read a liturgical article saying it's better to not switch languages all the time. There's a certain liturgical unity that you have to preserve. So that is why, even though maybe sometimes in the future we'll add in some other languages, I think I will just see where I am in the world. Maybe if I am in France for a couple of weeks, I will mix in a little bit of French. But right now, I try to focus more on English. Haven't had any complaints. So if you have suggestions, let me know on Discord. But I wanted to do a quick second review of Cyberpunk 2077, which I started playing several times. It is this kind of Blade Runner-esque RPG. It's actually there are three characters that you can play. I chose someone who lives kind of in the outskirts, outside of the city. It's part of a clan. Is one of the only moral characters that you can play, or relatively moral, because it's still a violent game. What I like about this particular character that I'm playing is that you can also always choose the non-violent route. So you still have to kind of get involved in the criminal underworld of the city. But for instance, when I sneak up on someone, I can pick either I'm going to kill that person and get rid of the body, or I can just immobilize that person, basically knock him or her out. So I like to have those choices. And then you can also specialize in hacking. so that you can use equipment to distract enemies, and then you can also sneak by. So it's actually one of those few games where violence, true violence, is optional. It's not the easiest. It's much easier to just get a gun and shoot everything and everyone. But it makes for interesting gameplay. The game itself reminds me a lot of Grand Theft Auto, including sometimes the vulgarity of the language and the kind of grittiness and violent nature of the world. It's more serious than GTA. GTA doesn't take itself very seriously. It's got a lot of goofy, over-the-top characters. Cyberpunk 2077 has a lot of weird people walking around, but it's more, I don't know, it feels more like they try to tell a more realistic story. And I have to say, what intrigues me, so the gameplay is, it's not always very compelling. The dialogue is downright dumb sometimes and uses a lot of slang. Even though I've got the subtitles on, I have a hard time understanding what is said because it's so much street talk. But there are moments that I feel like, wow, it's so detailed, and it's such a like a side mission that is fully acted, and the world itself is vast, and everything seems to be coherent. So, for instance, you step into a car, you get a mission from a guy, and then they bring you to the drop-off point. But in the meantime, you're actually really traveling to the city. This conversation can last for 10 hours. 10 minutes. But you're still driving in the same city. So it's huge, that city. And it's relatively diverse. I haven't really seen much repetition, only in the advertisements that come back over and over again, and the dialogue of people in the street. They always say the same things. So that kind of breaks your immersion. But architecturally, the city is vast, interesting, and it's all seamless. So you can walk into a house and go into the corridors, and it's incredibly intricate. It's not that in a lot of other games, it's just a facade and you can't enter the house unless it's linked to your mission. But here, it feels much more that this is a real city. If there is a stairs, I won't get blocked by some magical invisible boundary. I can just walk up those stairs and see, even if it's not, there's nothing to do there, but there's still people sitting there and junkies on the ground and trash that you can pick up and sell later on. And so that is interesting. I like something that is, you know, from a point of view of design, even though this is all done by hand, this is not like No Man's Sky, where everything is generated by a computer algorithm. This is all handcrafted. It's pretty amazing. So I'm not surprised that the game is full of bugs, because if you can see the scope, what they were trying to do, I think they kind of just miscalculated how complicated this would be, especially to port it to more modest systems like the Xbox, the previous Xbox and previous PlayStation. But all in all, you know, it's not bad. I definitely think it's worth the $20 that I paid for that game. But is this one of the best games I've ever played? Oh, no. This is quite forgettable. But it's kind of like GTA in a science fiction setting. And I'm not a big fan of GTA, but I do appreciate the open world nature and aspect of it. And that's kind of why I play these games. I don't care that much for the story. Certainly couldn't care less about the violence and the brutality of the story. But I just like these virtual worlds. And there's like the sense of exploring that you get. But sometimes you get the same feeling of exploring by just playing, you know, Zelda or something like that. But I like big open worlds. And I still hope that one day we will see a Star Wars equivalent of games like this. Imagine if Cyberpunk would have been Star Wars. And then that city would just be Coruscant. And then, of course, with more Star Wars family-friendly storylines, oh, man, that would be my dream. That would be my absolute dream. All right, and with that, it is time to wrap things up. Time for me to go check out that cake that Inga and Hank were bringing. And then we're going to tear down, finally, the Christmas tree that is still actually in my living room. But I need some help because it's a fake one. So we need to take the pieces apart and put it in the storage box. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a patron and a supporter. And we'll talk soon. Take care and God bless.